This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sophie. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Welcome to Game Day. Game 3 of the NBA Western Conference playoffs continue tonight. The venue switches to the Bay Area and San Francisco, to be precise, as the Golden State Warriors host the Houston Rockets. Hi again, everybody, and welcome in to Warriors This Week. Dan DeBowen along with you. Pasta, good morning to you. It is 9 o'clock, and Shedeur Sanders is still waiting. That's for another show, for another time. Good job, by the way, Pasta, on detailing everything that is the NFL draft over the last couple of days. But we're all about the Golden State. Thank you very much. We're all about the Golden State Warriors for the next 3 hours. You know the drill. Hit us up. Let's get into this. Let's go. You want to talk about Jimmy Butler? Still a game time decision as to whether or not he'll be available. Jonathan Kuminga talk. I'm here for you. JK, was he disappointing? Was that rust? Do you have to rely on him in terms of getting some sort of offense? What about Steph? What about the referees? A lot of chirping on the part of the Golden State Warriors at the holding. And we know it's going to get physical, but what it is that Steph is doing when the ball off the ball and when he's not having the ball in his hands is getting a bit excessive. Draymond Green, you knew this was going to happen. He's already created a back and forth with just about everybody in a Houston Rocket uniform. This is what the postseason is all about. Now, I do want to start there when we talk about the physicality, because we knew going into this, we talked about this last week, that this was going to be a series where tempers were going to flare. It gets physical in the second season regardless. It could be the Celtics, Magic, Lakers, T-Wolves, Pacers, Bucks. Does not matter. Everybody ramps it up to another level. But when it came to Houston and the Warriors, and when you thought about the characters involved, namely one Dylan Brooks, Alperen Şengün, their head coach Ime Udoka, who sort of creates and cultivates that sort of culture about being physical. And then, of course, on the other side, well, all you need is Draymond Green. I think that when you talk about physical play and when you talk about ratcheting it up in the postseason, he is the poster child. And so going into this series, we knew there was going to be a lot of back and forth. We knew that there was going to be the Houston Rockets exerting their muscle, their strength, specifically with two players in Alperen Şengün and Steven Adams. You throw Dylan Brooks into that mix. Tari Eason is a guy that drew the first technical, by the way, as he threw that towel in the face of Pat Spencer. It is as advertised. But here is what you have to think about going forward. Now, should the Golden State Warriors be able to prevail? And let's say the Warriors do advance to the second round. Let's say Houston, whoever it is that they take on, whether it's Minnesota or the Lakers. Minnesota, by the way, going up 2-1 now on the Lakers after their win at home last night. Now you have to think about what it is that you have left in the tank as you go forward and get into the semifinals and take on either the Lakers or the T-Wolves. How much is this taking away from you when you think about, well, the playoffs will last until early June? Joined now, of course, by my partner here, one Evan Giddings in the house. Evan, by the way, doing a game last night, so completely understandable. Who'd you have the call last night? Was it Santa Clara?
Yeah, Santa Clara. Also same today, same tomorrow. But, you know, it's like Jimmy Butler. Will he go? Will he show? It's kind of a game-time decision, you know?
Yeah, so here's where I was warming the crowd up with. I felt like, you know, before some of those sitcoms like Seinfeld, they have the guy who goes out there and warms up the crowd before the show actually starts. It was my role here over the last 3 minutes, 5 minutes. So I just feel as though, and we can get into Jimmy Butler certainly, but the toll that this is taking physically on the Warriors as well as Houston, but let's just keep this with the Warriors.
Yeah.
The physical toll that it's taking, when you think about this series, which I don't think it's going any shorter than six, potentially seven games, that yes, should they get through Houston and move on to take on, whether it's Minnesota or the Lakers, you just wonder how much this is taken out of them and what is it that they have left physically, because we're only scratching the surface when you think about the playoffs and you have the semis, the Western Conference, and the NBA Finals all in front of you.
Yeah, that's what struck me the most. I went back and I think the part that if anybody wants to watch this game, that's worth really taking a look at is the first 8 minutes of the game. Really the first 10 right before Jimmy Butler goes down. You saw a different level of physicality, of defensive focus, and more importantly, execution by the Houston Rockets. And I think that's what at least I expected them to do in game two after, I'm going to be honest, Dan, game one, They look kind of soft. I mean, and maybe it was just first game jitters. Jalen Green and Alperen Şengün's first playoff game, though Şengün did play really well. That team as a whole hasn't been there together yet in those kind of tight big game contests. Because also, think about it. They hadn't really had to play a game of importance this down the stretch of the season. I mean, they had the two seed locked up for the most part. And they were watching Denver, the Clippers, the Lakers, the Warriors, Memphis, they were all eating each other between the third and the eighth seed in the Western Conference. So they're looking from a top. Yes, they had no chance to catch OKC, but that first game, it was like, all right, we're back to playing meaningful basketball. Meanwhile, to your point, what scares me more about the Warriors and I guess the war of attrition that they're kind of fighting is that they've been doing this dance for 2 months. In their own words, they've been playing basketball, playoff basketball, for 2 months, really since Jimmy Butler got here, because they had to just to get in this position. So it isn't just, well, will they wear down in the series against Houston, or what will they have left in the second round? It's like, they've already been taxed to get to this point, in addition to running up against a very talented Rockets squad. So that's one of the reasons I'm also with you. I thought it was going to go six. I still have the Warriors in six. I think even if Jimmy Butler's hurt, they can get one of these next two games. But it's absolutely a challenge. And I think people after game one just kind of overlooked Houston.
Yeah, I think that's an astute analysis, because when you think about game one, maybe Houston wasn't ready to play. They weren't as physical. I'd stop short of calling them soft, but soft certainly is.
Compared to what we saw from them like the two Sundays prior.
And then I think that description was then you could apply that to the Warriors in game two. Mm. That the Warriors were also, I don't know if they were necessarily soft, but not as physical. And that's because I think the wake-up call clearly was for Houston after they lost game one, that there was an asterisk next to game two. Like, let's get after this. Like, what the hell are we doing? Let's go. And then the Warriors, you know, it was a perfect example how you have to bring it every single night. Every single game, you have to feel as though your backs are against the wall, your hair's on fire. If there's any room, if you're not at optimal level, you will get beat in the postseason. So now that Houston, maybe to your point, wasn't necessarily completely focused and ready to play in game one, they were in game two, and maybe the Warriors also, after getting game one, were a bit slightly complacent. Well, now it's on. Now it's game three. Both teams are awake. As they like to say, something has to give, which is why tonight is so much fun. And let's not waste any more time and get into Butler. I think it boils down to this. You're going to have to win a game, maybe two, without Butler. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't necessarily believe in a lot of what it is that I've read that it can happen. I think the Warriors can beat Houston without Jimmy Butler. I don't think you can win the series without Butler. I think you can get a game. Getting two games might be stretching it, but I think that's plausible as well. If he doesn't play tonight, the Warriors can win this game. Your thoughts on Butler and if he's not available tonight in game three?
I don't think it's a death sentence. I think one of the reasons why, I actually think it, like if Jimmy Butler hadn't gotten hurt, might be strong, but I think they still lose game two. Houston played desperate. And maybe that's the word I was looking for instead of soft. They didn't play with any desperation in game one. The Warriors were the desperate team because they came in to acquire one goal, and that was to steal one of those two games and they got it done. Now in game three, one of the reasons that I think the Warriors have a good shot to win, in spite of Butler's availability, and as of right now, he's officially questionable with the pelvis contusion, according to the Golden State Warriors. Steve Kerr said he's relatively optimistic yesterday that he's going to play, but in all probability is a game time decision. You're at home for the next two games. If there was a time to miss one of your two best players, this would be the time. You've already gotten a gauge of how physical this series is going to be. You've already taken care of, you've already got the Jalen Green 40 burger out of the way, essentially. I don't see him doing that again. And you also now had 2 days to prepare for a potential scenario where you don't have Jimmy Butler. To me, that's best case scenario. So the Warriors, might they not win tonight if Butler's not there? Sure. But I think that they absolutely have the ability to get two, or one of these next two, because also they've beaten this Houston team without Jimmy Butler. I realize it's the regular season. Teams were in different places. But the Warriors can go back and say, dude, we took care of you guys when we didn't even have our best squad. In fact, they won one game against Houston when Steph Curry and Draymond Green didn't even play on their home floor. So to me,
Jonathan Kuminga, 33 points.
Yeah, someone's going to have to get 30. I mean, whether it's Steph, whether it's, Chavano, whether it's Pods, someone's going to have to get 30 tonight. But I don't rule it out of the possibility because the Warriors have done it before.
Yeah, I think Steph's got to be Steph tonight.
100%.
And that's, you know, we should start right there because you got to free him up a little bit. Now, I don't know what it is that you can do. I'm not, because I also know that there's a lot of people out there that believe that Steph is not getting the benefit of the call. There's certainly truth to that, but a lot. Now, listen, if he's fouled on a three, you need to call that. And he was clearly, in my estimation, on numerous shots against Houston in the last game. That's an oversight on the part of the referees. Like, there's letting him play, but you can't miss calls. The grabbing, when he's running baseline and he's, you know, he's coming off of pin downs or he's trying to free up on the angle, or he's that perpetual motion Steph Curry. And when he's doing that and going through the washing machine, as they like to say, if he's taking an elbow in the gut, if he's getting grabbed by the jersey, I'm sorry, that's kind of what playoff basketball is all about. I don't think that you can start calling that. I just think that that's something you just got to deal with. It's annoying as hell. So what is it that you do to free up Steph? Do you have to set more screens? Is there somebody specifically, whether that's GP, that's got to set the hard screen? How do you free him up? But in terms of the grabbing and the tugging, I just think that that's, listen, the blatant foul calls on his shot when he's going to the rim and or shooting a three, blow the whistle. But the other stuff, to me, at least in my upbringing, that's just sort of what happens when the game gets ratcheted up to this level when you talk about the postseason. Yeah, Steph has got to be Steph.
No, sorry about that, Dan. He absolutely does. But I think that the 1-3 that where Van Vliet was like tugging on his jersey, he made it anyways. That was the one where he kind of like literally visibly tugged at his jersey to tell the ref that I was getting held. I'm with you. The off-ball stuff, it happens in every other game too. It just does. People grab, they pull, they tug, they hit. The referees can't call everything off the ball. And I know that I don't think it's any more drastic, but it is more aesthetically visible because Curry's oftentimes getting guarded by a guy that is 4 or 5 inches taller than him, that has a foot longer wingspan, and that literally looks like he's just consuming him at all times. No other player in the league gets guarded like that. And so I do think that it's our awareness of how Steph off the ball is being handled, so to speak, it's more heightened. But Steph has been dealing with this his whole career. And I'm sorry, if they haven't called it for the first 15 years of his career, I don't expect them to start calling it all of a sudden in year 16. The one thing that Steph has to be able to do or willing to do tonight, which I saw him and I thought was the key in game one, he has to be willing to take the punishment inside the paint. He has to be willing to get downhill. And there was less of that in game two. The Rockets are overplaying everything. I don't think it's a coincidence that the two most, actually really just the one most impactful player off the bench for the Warriors, there were two post, but Pat Spencer, dude, he just went to the rim as soon as he got into the game. And I know the Rockets are probably not expecting, at one point this year, a G League player to go out there and try and take it to him. But that is what Steph has to do. He started the first game 0 for 3. He made his next five shots. All of them were within the three-point line. And that is when everything opened up beyond the perimeter. Steph, at the very beginning of this game, has to be willing to go into the trees, to take the punishment, and to score from within the three-point line, something that he doesn't always do, or perhaps at age 37, sometimes is unable to do. Tonight, with 2 days of rest, with Jimmy Butler, even if he plays less than 100%, Steph has to be Steph, but he has to be two-point Steph. And the greatest three-point shooter of all time has got to be willing to take the punishment in the paint.
If I'm Steve Kerr knows this better than anybody. Right? He grew up going through the wars with the Chicago Bulls back in the day. He's not about to complain of the off-the-ball stuff. He understands it.
He himself did it. I mean, he played against John Stockton. Like, Stockton played off-ball and would set screens and get drilled all the time.
And he saw his teammate Michael Jordan, especially before Jordan got into the weight room, what it is that the Detroit Pistons did to him. But what I would do, and I'm sure Steve Kerr will because he's a smart coach, is that you blow in the ear of, who's got the game today, Bill Kennedy or Rodney Mott, the referees for the NBA playoffs or for tonight's game potentially, and you just say, hey, listen, just be aware of it. And, you know, Rodney Mott, Bill Kennedy, what I need you to do is just at least put the threat out there. Because what happens in an NBA game, there's that ongoing conversation. It's very similar to that of a boxing referee. Like, a referee in a boxing match, if it's a title fight, he may not take points away from you, but what he'll say during the fight, he'll say, Mayweather, you know, watch the low blows, keep the hands up. No rabbit punches, got to keep your hands up. I'm going to take points away. And so, if I'm a referee in tonight's game, I'm Bill Kennedy, I tell Dylan Brooks, hey, I see that, knock it off. I'll blow the whistle. You got to keep your hands to yourself. I'm watching. You got to let the players know without blowing the whistle that I'm aware of what's going on. You got to let Steph come through. You don't have to disrupt the game. But there has to be some of that, and I think it starts with Steve Kerr.
888-957-9570 is the number. Evan Giddings, Dan DeVoe, and Warriors this week. What are you expecting to see in game three? Jimmy Butler, questionable. If he can go, what percentage is he? How does that impact this game? If he can't go, can the Warriors win game three on their home floor? Do they need to? Do they have to get one of the next two? How are you looking at this game after what you saw in game two with Butler going down, Pajemski ill, not on the injury report tonight? That's good news. How are we feeling about the series right now as it stands at tied at one between the Warriors and the Rockets? Let's go down to the South Bay, talk to Oscar. Oscar, what's going on? Welcome to the program. Good morning.
And gentlemen, I'm trying to keep things fair here. The Warriors, they do a lot of complaining, and I don't know where it came from. You're a championship ball club. You really can't manipulate the officials as much as Draymond does. And no one really gets as many calls as Steph, because he usually kicks his leg out, and he falls. He's too small. He's going to hurt his wrist. He's going to hurt his cocky. It's just not worth it. Stay on your feet, shoot your jumper, and get back down court. Stop the whining. Play the game of basketball, and you'll be okay.
Wow, Oscar. Coming in hot early. First call of the day.
I don't hear any Warriors complaining.
Well, I don't think that they complain any more than other teams.
I think it's more like us and people that watch these games.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of the Warriors fans that want more whistles for Steph, or, you know, believe the Rockets are being too tough. I didn't hear any Warriors players complaining about calls after game two.
Neither did I.
Or the first game, to be honest. And that is when you know that things will get a little ridiculous. It's when you hear Steve Kerr go to the podium and the first thing he says, because actually, there was a game that the Warriors lost 91-90. It was the semifinals of the Emirates play-in, or a mid-season tournament, whatever the hell they call that thing.
The Emirates Cup.
Yeah. And there was a missed call at the end of the game. I think it was on Kuminga. He was going for the ball, and I think he wrapped up a Rockets player that went down, shot free throws, they lost. Steve Kerr, the first thing he did was, that was BS. Like, that was a bad call. You cannot make that call at that point in the game in that situation. There hasn't been any of that energy through the first two games of this playoff.
No, it's going to be physical. And the Warriors are, Oscar, I hear you, but I don't know that any of the Warriors are complaining. And again, a lot of this is you follow the lead of your head coach. And Steve Kerr, he stops short of singling out referees or saying that was a bad officiated game. First of all, you can't because you get a fine. But he's not making any excuses. This is the way, and I, quite frankly, I like it. Maybe not to the extent of what it is that we saw with Jimmy Butler, what we saw with John Morant, but that's just a result of players who are being much more hands-on, that every possession counts, that I'm blocking out, I'm crashing the boards, and things like what it is that we saw with John Morant as well as Jimmy Butler are going to happen. It's unfortunate. I don't think it was a dirty play. I haven't been here this week, but I'm not sure what it is that the fan base has been saying.
They
95-7 of the game.
They did not like it. A lot of people thought it was dirty. I personally didn't. I also didn't think the Lou Dort play was dirty. But
no, but I think I get it. Listen, you're fans. There's nothing wrong. Look, that's understandable.
It sucks.
Yeah, right. And if you want to point a finger at Amen Thompson, go right ahead, man. It's your right as a fan to do. Who the hell cares? But I think the way I see this is that this is what happens when things get so physical. If this is a regular season game, I don't think you're seeing Adams pushing Draymond, who's pushing Amen Thompson. There's not that much physicality. You don't have that many guys crashing. Granted, those are physical players. But if this is a regular season game, guess what? Butler's snaring that rebound and you're going the other way. But because every possession counts, because as you laid out, that before the game, Houston recognized this is a must win. They came out, knives out, fangs out, that they had to win this, and they're going after every loose ball. This is what happens. This is what happens when Lou Dort is running down what should be an uncontested hoop. You put yourself in an awkward position. It's because the intensity gets ratcheted up to a level that you don't see during the regular season. I don't think you can point a finger at Amon Thompson. Certainly, he doesn't have the reputation of doing that. And anybody who's watching the replay of that tape, I don't know how you arrived at that conclusion. But again, if that's how you feel, do you. I'm not here to say one way or the other. I just think that this is going to be playoff basketball going forward. And there's no room for whiners at this point. Buckle up. I think the bigger question becomes is what do you have left in the tank if you're to take on Minnesota and that Minnesota series ends in five games?
Well, I don't think that series is necessarily over, but could be wrong. I 100% agree with the
Clippers series is over.
That I also don't think is over. I could be wrong.
You're wrong.
From the 510, the Boxer and Gerson Work Injury Attorneys text line. When does Curry complain on light fouls? He does the complete opposite. I agree. Curry has the right to complain about so much that he doesn't. It's one of the reasons why I love watching him play, because I don't have to watch him like Luka Doncic whine about every single call. I don't have to look at him even like an SGA sometimes who's seeking contact and trying to get every call. I don't have to. I'm going to go after your guy, Jalen Brunson. Like, just be better.
Yeah, he's probably now taken over the lead. I think he supplanted Luka Doncic in becoming the most annoying flop, the most annoying grifter in the NBA right now.
Could you imagine if they both had stayed in Dallas? Like, how unbelievably...
It'd take 4 hours to play a game of those two complaining.
Unentertaining that would be. Oh my goodness. We have to watch these guys just seek contact for the entire game. Though I think Curry tries to, you know, heighten the referees sometimes to, show the contact that he's taken. I don't think he's somebody that complains unless it's absolutely egregious. All right, let's go on to the real Oscar in Stockton.
Double O's to start the show.
209. What's up, O?
Hey, look, I couldn't sleep. I've been waiting for this game. And I heard this cat call the other day, Oscar from Fresno. The real Oscar, please stand up. That's me. I'm going to check this out. He calling about Steph Curry crying and kicking. Man, that's he way in Fresno. That's why. He must not be watching the same TV rewatching. My thing is that with the Warriors, take care of business. And Steph Curry, he talks to the referees like a lawyer. He don't never complain like that. I mean, I have people say Steph be complaining and the Warriors complain. When have the Warriors complain? Draymond didn't complain. Curry didn't complain. Or Steve Kerr. They had nothing about this is playoff basketball. So everybody talking about the ain't nobody complaining. And even when Jimmy Butler got hurt, you didn't hear Jimmy Butler say it was a dirty play. Draymond didn't say it was a dirty play. And I didn't say it was a dirty play because it wasn't a dirty play. It happens like that sometimes. I told him I'm a telekinetic player of basketball. People, he did not, I know times he did not do that. So for everybody calling about the Warriors is soft, how are we soft if we won four titles already? How are we soft if we don't complain? So everybody, buckle up. Houston got a problem. And Oscar and Fresno, you're going to change your name, brother, because you can't call the 95.7 the game complaining about the Warriors.
Hey, Oscar, hang on there for a second. So I'm recognizing some Central Valley rivalry here. The 209, so I know you're hanging in the CV. Where are you? Where are you living right now?
I'm living in Stockton, California, man.
All right.
Yes, sir.
You know what I'm saying? He lives in Fresno, and my son will be out there next week in Fresno State for the league meet in the 400. He's going to wear him out. Fresno can't eat. Man, come on, man.
I can recognize that Fresno hate from anywhere.
Love it, Oscar.
Oscar, way to get us going, brother.
Good luck to your son, by the way. Appreciate the call. Oh, man. Dude, but that's the kind of energy that the playoffs is all about. I will also say this. The series, I believe, has been reset a little bit from the standpoint of the Warriors forced the Rockets to play like with their fangs out in game two. Yeah, I don't know tonight who is more desperate. A lot of it does depend on Jimmy Butler's injury, but the fact remains that neither team has to get this game. Game two was a must-win for Houston. Game three is not a must-win for either team. So I'm very curious to see how both of these sides come out, how they play in the immediate. 888-957-9570 is the number if you want to get on the conversation. Also the number for the Boxer and Gerson Work Injury Attorneys text line. Evan Giddings, Dan DeVoe, Warriors this week. We'll be back after this on 95.7 The Game.
Those road pinstripe gray jerseys. This one is hit well towards the opposite field. And that ball is gone. Andrew Raymond takes it the other way. And a solo strike starts the Santa Clara fifth.
Now back to Warriors this week on 95.7 The Game.
You got to turn your mic on.
What's with the cowbells? That's like Oakland A's.
They gave away the cowbells on Friday nights. That was from the Santa Clara game I was doing last night. God damn it, Pasta.
That's a good call.
Thanks, man.
Good call.
I did not know that. You guys are ridiculous. This is a basketball show. Save that for the summer. All right.
You know what I liked about that? Because I got to break down any time I hear play-by-play. So
okay.
I think that caught you off guard because he won Oppo. And you raised to the level of like, oh, that's got a shot. That's good. Perfect. Perfect. Don't oversell it. Don't get out of your skin. Just sort of stayed within the context of what I could hear right there. They were just having a conversation. All of a sudden, this guy went Oppo?
Well, he hit it 109 off the bat. So it was like a wall scraper. Like you didn't know whether or not it was going to get out.
That's what it sounded like.
Yeah, those are kind of tough. It's kind of like I'm fascinated. I mean, like Fitz and Tim Roy is going to be on the call tonight at 5:30 right here on 95.7 The Game. They've seen Steph take so many, you know, ridiculous threes, but Tim Roy had a call in game one of Curry's the fadeaway from the corner, or somehow, some way, he doesn't know there's like a millimeter between his heel and the out-of-bounds marker, throws it up into the heavens and it comes down, and he aptly describes it as a miraculous shot on Easter. And Wow. It was just a great in-the-moment call, and I'm thinking, how the hell, like, did you have that in your bag just in case Steph did something crazy? Because anytime a shot goes up from Curry, you have to assume it's going to go in.
Who had the game? Was it B.A., Brian Anderson, or was it your guy that had the game on... Was it Harlan that had game one?
I think Harlan is
did
doing...
have game one.
Oh, yeah, that's right, because it was the geometrically should not have happened.
That's the call, yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, that was, and I don't know if that was in his bag, but that was well done. And that was one of those where Steph had a couple where he beat the buzzer, and that sidestep through that one was the most miraculous. But
well, and that's one of the reasons why, if I was Houston, you try and put both hats on. If I'm Houston after game one, I don't think that I was feeling as bad. And look, fans are, you know, confident. You steal game one. But if I'm Houston, I was talking to my cousin. He's from the Woodlands. He lives down south. He's a big Rockets fan. And he was like despondent.
Wait, how do we, so from the Woodlands down south, how does that relate to Houston, Texas?
The Woodlands is a suburb of the Houston area.
Oh, I thought Woodlands in the Bay. Okay, sorry.
I don't know. The Woodlands, Texas, it's literally a city. And in fact, I think Fitzgerald actually he shot that from the Woodlands in game one. It might have been that one in the fourth quarter hit over Amon Thompson where Amon just like throws his hands up and says, what the hell am I supposed to do?
Is Nassau in Houston? It is, right?
NASA?
Yeah. Isn't that why they're the Rockets? Anyways, look that up, Puss.
I think so.
Sure.
Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
Sure, NASA's in here. I honestly don't know. Although I have been to the Kennedy Space Center in Florida. That one's awesome.
Oh, okay. Well, they also have some sort of a museum in Houston, I want to say, that I've been to. It's a long time ago. Go ahead.
I'm with you. I'm sure our YouTube chat will agree. By the way, Jimbo on our YouTube chat, feeling nervous tonight. I understand that, but that's to get back to my point. If I was Houston, I wouldn't have been feeling nervous after game one because Curry hit some unbelievable shots. You still held them to 95 points. And in game two, if you get a slightly better offensive performance like they did, granted Butler got hurt, I still think they would have won the game. Now the question is, can they do it again? I never felt like Houston couldn't get a 30 burger from Green or a 20 and nearly 20 game from Şengün. But can you do it four times out of seven? That's what the playoffs is all about. It's not about one game or how you look night to night. It's about can you repeat yourself over 2 weeks of eventually condensed basketball when these games get to every other night? And is that going to be good enough to beat your opponent? I personally don't believe that Houston can replicate what they did in game two three more times. And that's why I believe the Warriors are eventually going to win this series.
Let's just do this under the assumption that Jimmy Butler's not available tonight because I don't think he's going to play. May not play on Monday.
I think you have to assume he's not.
Yeah. So we're under the assumption that he's not playing tonight. We'll just keep it for tonight and wait to see what happens on Monday. The Warriors still can win the game. I strongly believe the Warriors can beat the Houston Rockets. And I think Steve Kerr knows that as well. The question becomes, and stop me if you've heard this before.
Okay.
Who can score the basketball not named Steph Curry? And it's an age-old question. We've been dealing with this going on 4 or 5 years now. Ever since the decline of Klay Thompson, or Thompson wasn't as consistent. Who, by the way, kind of the forgotten component of all of this. Now that Dallas is out, Klay Thompson watching the Warriors in the playoffs, making a playoff run.
He was actually, he was on Instagram Live, was it last night or two nights ago? He was on his boat. And I don't know if he was in some, lagoon in Texas or if he was back in the Bay Area in his off-season home in Sausalito. But he was just out there having a great time. Like, I actually don't think that Klay Thompson gives a rip.
I think he does. Just from what I can tell, the guy's a little overly sensitive. And I think if you do something like that, it's almost like Shedeur Sanders tweeting out last night a quote, some biblical reference. I think that it hurts. Otherwise, you don't say anything. To me, people that are really comfortable in their own skin don't need to say, hey, look at me. I'm on a boat. I don't really care. That's just telling everybody that you do care. That is, by the way.
get off our guy, all right?
That, by the way, just really quick, because Nico Harrison did a press conference. By the way, Nico, I'm with Charles Barkley. Don't do press conferences anymore. But can we just move on from Nico Harrison? Like,
were recording devices allowed?
It's getting to the point where it's just like, enough. I heard it on more podcasts. I get it. He orchestrated the worst trade potentially in the history of sports, but we just love to hate on people now. Like, I think the grace period, a month, 2 months, it's just like, all right, Nico Harrison's, he's a coconut, but it's beginning to be more of a reflection on you and your inadequacies if you continue to hate on this guy on a daily basis. Yes, move on. It was a mistake. If you're Dallas, you live in Dallas, I get it. He'll go down in infamy. But for the rest of us at Arden, you know, what do they call it? The triplex, wherever that, you know.
Metroplex.
I'm not into Dallas.
First of all, Babe Ruth is the worst trade in the history of sports. But I do think it has.
They're saying that's right up there with it.
We don't know that yet. I mean, Luka could never win a title or snap his knee next year. Knock on wood.
Are you familiar with Bye Bye Babette?
No. Enlighten me.
So that's the name of the play that the Boston Red Sox owner needed to get funded. And that's the reason why he traded. I might be screwing up the name. So that's part of the reason why he traded.
I feel like Pasta would know this. Pasta, do you know this story?
Yes, and the play ended up tanking.
Yeah, but that but he got cash to fund this play, which is the reason
he needed cast members for the play, and he traded Babe Ruth for money, and then the show tanked.
Fossey, you're amazing. I want to kiss you on that forehead. He's 14 years old, and he knows more stuff about me, knows more stuff about baseball going back to the days of Babe Ruth.
No, he just turned 16 last week.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. I'll buy you a first beer in a couple of years.
That's what you said last week. I'm just kidding.
I still got to buy you a beer. All right.
So it gets back to, again, who scores the basketball, not named Steph. Because if you're Houston, we saw it when Butler went out. They're just like, that's Steph. Everybody go get him. And when I say everybody, I mean just about everybody. There are like three guys that were addressing him across the timeline. And it's going to be that way tonight.
See, I mean,
it's that way even with Butler. But now without Butler, again, we've been dealing this for a while. So the Warriors know this. We know this. Maybe you share that wealth. Maybe it's a little bit of Moody. It's a little bit. I want to get into Moody, by the way. Maybe it's a little bit of Pajemski. Hopefully he's healthy.
I'm less concerned about what
they're
going
to
do.
I don't want to mention JK, but I will.
No. Actually, I think, of course, we spent like 5 months talking about him every single day. Today's actually the day we should be talking about him if Jimmy Butler's not going to play. But we'll table that for a moment because I actually have more concern about how they're going to defend the Rockets because Butler is a second safety with Draymond. And I just think his smarts out there make it so the Houston Rockets can't just hunt. Like, without Butler, you're going to have to play more post. You're going to have to play more Hield, potentially. You're going to have to play more Kuminga. All three of those play. And Kuminga's not a horrible on-ball defender, but he's not a great help defender. He's not a heady defender. And that's what has made the Warriors' defense, I think, as good to the point where they've been number one in defensive rating since Butler has gotten here. Without him, you saw Jalen Green or Şengün just put post in pick and roll, put Kevon Looney in pick and roll, put at times Kuminga in pick and roll. They are going to hunt every single mismatch on that floor. And Jimmy Butler, at the very least, makes it so he can come over and take pressure off of guys. He can double at right times. I think a big reason why Jalen Green got 38 points in that basketball game was because Jimmy Butler was not there. So I hear you about scoring, and I get it, but I don't think it's a coincidence they went from 85 to 109 points after, you know, game one to game two.
Oh, they've been the best defense since Butler arrived. Their offense doesn't scare me. I get it. Jalen Green went off, and yes, everything you said is true, but
like, if they score close to 110 points, I don't care if Butler's in or not. The Warriors are going to be hard-pressed to win those games.
Well, they're not going to get 110 points if you take care of the basketball. Like, again, that team in a half-court set struggles. And this is statistically supported. Jalen Green went off, but he hasn't been consistent not only, you know, throughout this season, but throughout his career. So maybe he has another 38, 35 points in his bag. He certainly has the talent to do it, but he hasn't been consistent. And then once you get past Jalen Green, it's a bunch of athletes that don't necessarily scare me or shouldn't scare anybody offensively because that's really where they've struggled. Where they're good at is that, and the Warriors, you know, they started to turn the ball over in the second half of that basketball game, and you can't do that in any game, but you specifically and especially can't do that against the Houston Rockets.
No, especially...
Because that nullifies the one advantage you have that they're not good in a half-court set, but if you put them in motion on live ball turnovers... Then that throws all of that out the door.
Yeah, I totally agree because you have to assume you're not going to beat them on the glass. You might not even beat them sometimes at the free throw line. But the one thing you can control and have control over is possession. How careful are you with the basketball? And that's where I'm with you, you know, on offense. It isn't necessarily generating points. I guess the two are sort of intertwined. They're connected. How many shots on goal can you get? How many times can you not give the ball in extra possessions to the other team? Like, Houston should take by far and away the most shots in this series because they're going to get second chance opportunities, they're going to get offensive rebounds, and they're going to take a lot of shots. But how many possessions can you maximize? And that's where Butler has been a freaking godsend. And you're right, it was night and day different. The Warriors went from looking like a team that was on a 65-win pace from game one with Jimmy Butler in a small condensed sample size, to the team before Butler, who was a game below 500 and could not figure out how to win consecutive games after they started 12-3. It was a team that struggled to find any semblance of a defensive idea. That's actually the biggest thing that jumps out to me. They look like a team without an identity. They're back to a team that doesn't know what their roles are. And that's where the glue of Jimmy has been so massive on both ends of the floor. So, you know, we're splitting hairs a little bit. I think it's more on defense. You think it's more on offense. But the fact remains, he has his fingerprints all over everything that the Warriors do. And so the question that I would like to throw out at 888-957-9570 is, who needs to step up for Jimmy Butler? Who needs to, and I don't know if it's necessarily the X factor. The 510 is saying the X factor tonight, if Butler doesn't play, is how Draymond plays. He needs to be excellent. You know, who needs to step up and play better in game three if Jimmy's not available?
One thing to keep an eye on tonight, they're going to blitz Steph Curry. All right, that's one thing I can, there's not a lot of things I can guarantee in life. If Jimmy Butler's not available, book it. They're going to send three guys at Steph. Here's what you really have to keep an eye on tonight. And hopefully somebody blew into Steph's here. They watched tape extensively yesterday, and Steph knows this. But the hard thing about Steph is because he has such a remarkable handle, he's going to try and break that pressure sometimes. And he wants to dribble through that because he can. We saw that lead to a couple of turnovers. That's just difficult to do. It's three guys. Steph wants to break that pressure and then get rid of the basketball. I don't want to sound like Joe Coach here, but I hope Steve Kerr is telling him the minute you recognize that pressure, get rid of the basketball. Because if you get that to GP out in front at the top, now it's almost like you're 4-on-1. Now it's like a 3-on-2 break. If you make Houston pay, if you get the ball out of Steph's hands and take advantage of that man advantage that they're going to have, and you make Houston pay, and you're scoring off of that, whether you're throwing a Draymond in the dunker spot or you're taking advantage of that one or two man advantage, it's almost like equivalent to being in a consistent power play in hockey. If you make Houston think about that, they'll back off. They'll call off the dogs. You won't see the double or triple team, but they're going to do it until proven otherwise. So Steph, A, the minute he recognizes that, step back, get rid of the basketball, and go to work. Take advantage of that. Do not try and break that pressure with the handle, because once you turn it over, then it's compounding things. Then it's not only are we nullifying Steph, but once again, it's getting us out and letting us run and doing what it is that we do best with all of these wings.
Well, that's why, again, if you go back and watch the beginning of game two, I think that there was trouble on the horizon before Jimmy Butler even got hurt. And one of the reasons is Steph was really loose with the ball. He ended up with 6 turnovers. Draymond had 5. But very first possession, Steph comes down and tries throwing one of his patented hook passes, throws it into the first row over Pajemski. And it's like, that's what we're doing tonight, you know? Even with Butler in the game. So, yes, I agree with you that Curry has to get the ball out of his hands, but the issue is that because Houston is going to send 2 probably bigger players at him, he himself has to be really careful. Like, I understand that other team or other players and teammates need to make plays, but Steph has got to be better with the basketball. And in fact, I know that he's incendiary. He could score 20 in a quarter. But the one thing that I need from Steph Curry tonight is fewer than 4 turnovers. I need him to be the guy that is rock solid with the ball, because if he's not, I know that he can pop off and he can score a lot of points and he's going to get you baskets at will. But without Jimmy Butler, they need Steph to be the point guard, not the shooting guard tonight. That's how I think they can win.
Let's get to some calls. All right. I want to continue with the turnovers. And not only Steph, but I also want to bring Draymond into the equation as well.
That's a good point. All right, let's go down to San Diego. Talk to our guy, Coach Hall. What up, Coach? Good morning.
Hey, what's up, fellas? Happy Saturday.
Back at you.
Yeah, for me personally, I think Draymond is an X factor. If you go back to the finals, he's been borderline unplayable since then. if he's not even going to look at the basket or make point-blank layups, we're at a 4-on-5 disadvantage every time. Him trying to thread the needle and force passes in, I think, personally, he's the most important player, and he sets the tone. You cannot start the game off with back-to-back turnovers because it's like it's contagious at that point. So I just think he needs to put the pressure on the defense. I don't even care if he misses. Just attack the basket. The law averages, something is going to go in, man. Just look at the basket, put us in a good spot, and I think we'll be all right.
I got you, Coach. I kind of agree. Like, I think that I don't know if it's taking a ton of threes, but Draymond has to make, because he's doing it on the, he has to make Şengün work a little bit. Like, Şengün is not a great interior defender. And I think the Rockets played less with Steven Adams in game two than they did game one. That means that, again, the place where the Warriors have to do their damage is in the paint. And Draymond's got to be a part of that. I agree.
And, you know, who also has to be a part of that is Moses Moody. Moody has to go back to the guy he was. Remember, just before the Jimmy Butler trade, and especially after the Jimmy Butler trade, the confidence he had in shooting the ball. He was becoming a scorer. He was becoming the guy that Steve Kerr was trying to bring out. Like, don't be deferential. We like your jump shot. You can shoot a three. You can get to the rim. Be confident. It's your four. Go get it. Attack the rim. Be a two-way player. And he was blossoming into that player, I think, for a good two-month stretch. Went into a bit of a funk. And right now, while he still helps you out defensively and you need his length and you need what it is that he can do on the defensive end, but offensively, this is a perfect example of a young player that I look at that the stage and the lights are a little bit too bright for him. And I just see this guy as he's not the same player, and immediately he's looking to give it up to either Butler or to Draymond or to an adult in the room. He has got to get after it. He has the ability. It's just about confidence at this point. For the majority of young players, there's a reason why you're getting run. And this is true for everybody in the NBA. It's because you have the ability to do it. Now, when you get to the second season, it just becomes about what's between your ears. Do you have the confidence to go out and shoot your shot and get yours? You have the ability. Do you have the confidence? That's what you need from someone like that of Moses Moody, who I think is much better equipped to give you points offensively than that of a Draymond Green.
Well, the thing that I find interesting about that is Moody, he looked tentative in game one. And to start game two, he actually looked really aggressive. It's almost like he carried that confidence from making his last two shots. They're big shots. In the fourth quarter, under 5 minutes, he hit that fading two in the end of the shot clock, and then he hit the three from the corner, which essentially put the game away. In game two, he came out and he hit his first shot. It was a tough one. It was like a transition three, rattled it in left side, and then it was just kind of nothing. Like, he just floated for the rest of the game. So I find it interesting when and where Moody picks his spots to be aggressive. I'm with you. I do think, I don't know if it's for him to put on a scoring hat, but he has to be willing to shoot the ball more. And for him to take three, maybe four threes, if Butler's not playing and they're looking for extra, and that means that they're going to try and take Curry out of this, the Warriors are going to have to rely on someone like Moses to knock down threes, because Quinton Post took 9 in that game, in game two. He is not afraid. Post is someone that is now stepping in, found his shot, made his first postseason triple, and he's like, give me the rock. I want to see Moses Moody have the same kind of aggression for the three-point line, or even at the rim, because he has the ability to attack, play with the same kind of aggressiveness that Quinton Post has.
And we're sort of dancing around this, and maybe we'll do it in the next segment.
Yeah, I do want to get to it at 10 o'clock.
Yeah, Jonathan Kuminga, when we talk about offense and who's going to supply the offense, I think that there's a guy who's equipped to do it. We can talk about his performance in game two, and if he does get run tonight, I think that's, once again, the guy who can narrow that gap between Steph and everybody, the field, if you will, of trying to find another guy who's going to give you big points tonight.
Well, let's sneak in a caller, especially because Brian in San Francisco wants to talk about something that I love. Brian, what's going on, man? You're on Warriors This Week. Brian, not Brian, it's Pasta. Brian. You put Jimmy up.
No. I want to talk about how Hey, guys. Great to be on. I want to talk about how the guy who needs to step up is Buddy Hield. We know that Steph is going to get double, triple teams, like you guys said. Buddy, number seven, the splash buddy, can be very streaky. We need him to play like he did that first, you know, fifth of the season, first 10 games where we had a ton of hope. If he hits a ton of open shots, then we're in good shape. And also on the turnover point, you know, the Warriors love that high-risk pass. And so you talk about preventing turnovers, but, you know, those high-risk passes turn into 2-3 points sometimes. So I just want to talk about that. But the man that needs to step up is number seven, the man from the Bahamas.
The man from the Bahamas.
Here we go.
Chavano, thank you, Brian.
Here we go.
I mean, it's going to happen. He's going to win a game. Why not tonight? He's going to win a game in this playoff run for the Warriors. Why not tonight?
I'm over it.
I know you are.
I'm just over it. I don't think it could. No, I don't think he's a good player. I mean, yes, he can give you some nights, but he's just like defensively, I look at it. I'm like, I don't understand it. I don't get it. And some of his decision making, it's just, and if he's not giving you, if he's not giving you threes, it's just, I'm sort of perplexed. But it's Steve Kerr. Steve Kerr knows a hell of a lot more about what's going on with the Warriors than I do. So certainly defer to that man.
Yeah, the 5-0's with you. Buddy Hield needs some serious help to get his offense back. Look, but part of it is shtick. I do like ribbing you a little bit about our boy Chavano.
I'd love to see it.
So would I. Because every time he has a good game, I'll come in here and jab you. But it's been quite some time. I think that Buddy is a guy that he's actually... The Rockets are a tough matchup for him because the one thing they do really well is defend the three-point line. I mean, they allow the fewest threes to be taken. He can't put the ball on the floor.
He's not going to get his shot off from this point forward because the one thing about him is he has a hard time creating his own shot. Steph is the best at it in the history of the sport in terms of his sidestep, step back, his handle. He'll get his own three if two guys are in his face. Buddy has to have an eye in the front rim. He has to be open, and then it'll go in. He can't create his own shot. And guess what? As we have talked about all along, right now in the playoffs, there's no room. You're not getting that room. It's not November. It's not October. Teams are not letting you cast and taking your time to shoot that shot. They are in your face, and that's not going to stop. And so I don't know. I don't foresee how this guy can be a factor going forward.
All right, 888-957-9570 is the
still
number.
Still the nicest guy in the world.
Oh, he is. I mean, he's also the Golden State whipping boy, it feels like, for just about everybody in this fan base. All right, on the other side, we're going to open it up. Who do you think needs to be the X factor? What do the Warriors need if Jimmy Butler cannot play tonight? Right now, he is questionable with a left pelvis contusion. Gary Payton II also popped up on the injury report. Questionable with a right shoulder strain. And then Steph Curry with the right thumb is available tonight. That's the Warriors injury report for the Houston Rockets. They're completely clean. They are 100%. What do you want to see from the Warriors tonight in game 3? 888-957-9570. Evan Giddings, Dan Devone, Warriors This Week. Back after this.